broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia. From Boots to Biz Radio, sharing helpful information and practical insight about the franchise industry for the military veteran entrepreneur. Now, here's your host, Bill Williams.
Good afternoon, everybody. Everyone out there in cyberspace, I am Bill Williams, and this is From Boots to Biz. We are dedicated to promoting franchise ownership among military veterans, military spouses, and first responders. So our goal is to provide a lot of information and to help people move into that arena. And our guest today is Joe Gottlieb. Joe is a partner in the Sandy Springs firm of Cohen, Goldstein, Port, and Gottlieb. And he specializes in franchise attorneys. Say hello, Joe.
Hello. How are you, Bill?
I'm doing great. Thanks for coming in today.
Sure.
And I'm really pleased that you're here because I think a lot of people are kind of get overwhelmed or intimidated when they start looking at the FDD, the franchise disclosure document, and the contract and agreements, and gee, what do I sign and what do I don't sign and all that stuff. So I think it's be very valuable to have you here today to talk about those things.
Well, thanks. So, I hope we can shed some light on it. It is a scary looking document.
Well, and it's a big decision for people to change their career and you know, tie themselves into an agreement like that. Mm-hmm. So you want to be sure and you want to have confidence. So very good. Well, let's jump right in. Tell folks, I mentioned FDD, the franchise disclosure document. What exactly is that?
Well, franchising, Bill, is a business model that's regulated by federal law and by the laws of about 14 or so states. And the Federal Trade Commission has come to the wise conclusion that franchisors have to disclose information pre-sale to their prospects. They have to provide a laundry list of things, and all those things, including the contracts that may have to be signed, are all included within this document that's known as the Franchise Disclosure Document, or the FDD. That's a fairly weighty document, 200-300 pages typically.
And it used to be called
the UFOC.
The UFOC, Uniform Franchise
Offering Circular.
I can always get the first two, but not the. Well, what people who are not used to the franchise industry, their first venture into it, what some of the most important things that they're going to find in that FDD?
Well, there's a lot of information there, Bill. The FDD has a table of contents that shows it has 23 items of information that are required to be presented to the prospective franchisee. And the rule says, the FTC rule says, that the document has to be provided to the prospect at least 14 days before the prospect can sign the agreement or before the franchisor can accept money. So it's a period to digest the information, to seek legal advice, accounting advice, to avoid someone being pressured into a purchasing situation. And there is a lot of information in there. In fact, it has to contain information about the business, about the owners, the directors, the shareholders, their backgrounds, whether there's been any bankruptcies or litigation involving the franchisor or the owners. They have to also outline the fees, everything from the initial fee to the ongoing fees, and they have to also outline an estimate of what the startup expenses are going to be, broken down into numerous categories, everything from the initial fee to inventory to build-out to advertising and working capital and all those types of things. They also have to provide information about what the franchisor is going to do for the franchisee, whether there are required purchases. They also have to provide information about the status of the franchise system, the number of franchisees mm-hmm. over the past 3 years, how many people have come on, how many people have left, how many units have been transferred. And that's very, very important information.
Yep.
And another very important piece of information is that the franchisor is required to present 3 years of its audited financial statements. So it gives the franchisee an opportunity to see how strong a footing this franchisor is on.
That's very valuable. Estimate of cost to start, because I run into a lot of people and talk to a lot of people that they've been out cruising the internet, and their guideline is well, what's the lowest franchise fee I can pay to get into a business? But that doesn't come anywhere close usually to a startup cost. That's what they got to look at, right?
Right. The way the fee structure works in a franchise business is that there's an initial fee that has to be paid. That's called the initial franchise fee. But that represents typically only a fraction of the startup costs. Mm-hmm. And the initial franchise fees can go anywhere from maybe $10,000 on the low end to $50,000 on the high end or even higher. Mm-hmm. There can be training expenses. And you can take a franchise system with a $25,000 franchise fee with maybe a total initial investment of $300,000.
Yep. So they have to look a bit under the covers and read that and understand it. So
you do.
Do you find that the average layperson is really equipped to read the FDD, or should they scan it and then bring questions to you?
Well, you know, that's a great question. I would say there the majority of people that buy franchises do not have it reviewed by legal counsel, and I that's unfortunate. And I think the reason for it is that there is this generally held thought that the franchisor is not going to negotiate any of the terms mm-hmm. of the deal in the franchise agreement. So why do I need to have it reviewed? But you know that's missing the point. The FDD is supposed to be written in plain English, so you and I can sit and read it. But what you take from it is really where the rubber meets the road. You know, mm-hmm. Someone who's looked at one has no way of knowing what is in line, what's unreasonable, right. What's the industry standard.
That's really key. And you know, if their uncle is a real estate attorney, is that okay for him to read the franchise agreement? Because I get that one too.
Well, you know, that's another question that I get asked a lot. You know, franchise agreements are different types of agreements. You know, now remember the franchise agreement is part of the FDD. You know, mm-hmm. And the franchise agreement, the nature of the franchise agreement and the franchise relationship is that it's on paper very one-sided. You know, mm-hmm. it is not your typically highly negotiated contract. So your general lawyer who doesn't have experience in franchising is often going to look at the document and is just going to think it's unacceptably one-sided and really will scare people to the point of not getting a deal done. And that comes with a lack of an understanding as yep. to what the relationship really is about.
Just being kind of naive about the circumstance. Right. Good. Well, you said a moment ago you mentioned negotiation. Are there parts of the agreement that might be negotiable? I mean, are in general, or is it too specific to the brand?
Well, it's not only specific to the brand. It's often specific to the length of time or the maturity of the franchise system. It's been estimated that there are over 3,000 franchises yep. out there for sale. And some are good, some are not as good. Mm-hmm. There are some folks that are earlier on in their development, and they have this need to sign up franchisees. So you're more likely to be able to get reasonable concessions from an earlier stage franchisor. Certainly, if you McDonald's is not going to negotiate their franchise agreement.
Right. Or Great Clips or any of those. But some of their franchises are not created equal by any means. So you've got the mature ones and the brand new ones, and so you've got to do that due diligence is just so important to people.
Well, that's right. And the FDD is it provides a lot of information from which due diligence can be done. One of the things that has to be presented in the FDD is a list of the franchisees. Not yep. only the current franchisees, but those that have left the franchise system in the past 12 months. And the franchisor has to provide names, addresses, telephone numbers. So the first conversation that I have with my franchisee clients are, tell me about your due diligence. And mm-hmm. we spend a bunch of time on that. Want to make sure that they've asked the questions, mm-hmm. suggest questions that they could ask. And there's no substitute for a thorough due diligence, because inevitably the franchise documents are going to be somewhat vague about what the franchisor's obligations are. And that's one of the odd things about the contract, the franchise agreement. So the best way, I think, to find out what a franchisor will do is to see what they have done and ask those yep. tough questions of the franchisees.
Actually, I think that's one of the most valuable parts of the process, is that the prospective owner has the opportunity to talk to really as many current owners as they can reach, and some of the past owners, ones that have dropped out, and they can ask them those tough questions, you know.
And
they can have that. They have that right, and before they've spent any money or made any obligation. So, you know, it's kind of an open book in some ways if you can really drill down and make them do that, make them ask those questions.
Well, make them ask the questions. But what happens often is that the question that the prospect wants answered the most.
How much money can I make?
Is the hardest one to get an answer to. And to that end, one of the items in the FDD is what they call the financial performance representations, used to be known as an earnings claim. Mm-hmm. And that's a part of the FDD where the franchisor has the opportunity but not the requirement of furnishing information. And typically it's in the form of historical performance information from some group of franchisees. But I believe the statistic is that there are about 80% that provide no financial performance mm-hmm. representation. And what will happen during the due diligence process often is that franchisees just don't want to share the information. Some do and some don't.
Yeah.
And it can be hard to get that question answered.
Yeah, and you're right. That's what everybody wants to know. You know, when can I start making the big bucks? And you really got to work hard to get it out and ask it in different ways and see what and then compare your answers. So, how about I love that you can talk to people who have dropped out. But what are the other red flags that you touched on them briefly? But let's talk a little bit more about red flags of people to be alert for and look out for.
Yeah. Well, what I consider red flags are some things that might be obvious and some maybe not as so. You know, because the franchise disclosure document requires disclosure of litigation and bankruptcies, those are obviously red flags, or at least areas that should require further looking into. You know, litigation in and of itself is not necessarily a bad thing, but mm-hmm. If you see trends in the litigation, particularly anything that looks like fraud or some dishonesty on the franchisor's part, that's an issue. But more subtle red flags to me would be a lack of a strong infrastructure or looking at the management team and the background of the management team. You know, the FDD requires that the franchisor mm-hmm. disclose, 5 years background of what their principal officers and directors have been doing, who they've worked for. And, for the good and bad, you can look at, if they've come out of strong franchise systems, that's a good thing. If you've got an early stage franchisor in particular with, the only people they're disclosing is maybe the owner founder, that's a little bit of concern because if they're in a growth mode, the question is, well, how well are those few people going to be able to support all these franchisees that are coming on board, Another pretty obvious red flag would be in looking at what we call the item 20 disclosure, which is where they have to list the status of the units, and you look at high attrition rates. Now, mm-hmm. people leave franchise systems for all kinds of reasons. If you have an ability to sell your unit, that's often a good thing. But mm-hmm. if there are a high number of terminations or just high attrition rates in general, that's something to look into, certainly to look into further. The other thing that I would say is when you look at the disclosure of the estimated startup costs, if they look askew, if it just doesn't look too low. For instance, if they're required to rent a space, and they'll have to disclose estimated rent for the first 3 months, if I'm looking at that and I know what generally rents are in the Atlanta market, and if this is an out-of-state franchisor, mm-hmm. for instance, and it looks too low, these are things to be concerned about. You have to get validation of those costs.
Yep. And don't look at it and say, oh, that looks great because it's a low number. I can really do that because that may be way underestimating what you need.
And there are other things I would add with regard to red flags in general. And one of the fundamental things to look at, and I know you do for your prospects, Bill, mm-hmm. as a consultant, is to look at what the business is, what's the nature of the service or the product that's being sold, and is it trendy? Is it subject to consumer discretionary spending?
Yep.
Is it technology heavy, where it may become outdated in a short time? you know, is the market that it's in, is it fragmented? Is there something unique about the concept or about the way the service or the product is being offered? So you've got to step back from it, from the details, and look at overview, what it really is. Along those lines, the other thing that I'm always concerned with is when a franchisee becomes captive to their franchisor in terms of buying product or something that they're going to have to sell, because the way franchises work is that royalties or the ongoing fees that are paid by the franchisee are based on gross revenue,
right?
Typically, right? So if I've got to buy my primary product that I'm reselling from my franchisor, the franchisor is typically making a profit on it, and then I've got to pay a royalty again based on the gross revenue. That can have an impact certainly on the franchisee's bottom line.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And again, you have to go into it with your eyes open and understand those things. So
right.
Covered a lot of good items there. The go back to something else you mentioned. I know that a franchise or a new franchise owner can't sign an agreement under 14 days from they first receive it. But is there anything like a deadline on or a restriction on the final, getting the final agreement? Like, isn't there a 7-day or something like that in there?
There is a 7-day period that is really can often be part of the 14 days. And what that rule says is that the franchisee has to have their franchise agreement with all of the blanks filled in, ready to sign, essentially, 7 days before they have to sign it. So the typical scenario is that there are no changes to the franchise agreement and it looks exactly the same as it did within the FDD, but for the names and addresses and such from being filled in. So typically you wouldn't have an additional 7-day waiting period. But if the franchisor wants to make changes, what we call a unilateral change or a non-negotiated change to the franchise agreement, then that version of the contract would have to be given to the franchisee at least 7 days before they could sign it. If, however, the changes were negotiated, that 7-day rule wouldn't apply, provided that the 14 days has already elapsed.
Okay. Well, I'm working with a father and son right now, and they got the original FDD around the 1st of December, okay? And then the holidays and, you know, the father's still employed, so he had, you know, travel, you know, 100% of the time. They're getting down to the last. So the last, you know, I think the only change that they would see in an agreement is defining the territory, the specific area that they're going to have to work. So would that be a 7-day waiting period from the time they get that FDD to the signature, or does that fall into the original period?
I think it would fall into the original period, but the franchisor, out of an abundance of caution, might tell them to hold off until the 7 days.
Yeah. Okay. Good. That's I can pass that on. So, well, now you're based here in the Atlanta area.
Yes.
But, you know, this program is designed to reach out to military veterans across the country. You can work with anybody, you know, or people anywhere in the country, right?
Yeah, I can, but there's a caveat to that.
Okay.
I can work with a client out of state in reviewing the documents. To the extent that there may be certain state franchise laws that would impact that, I'm fairly well versed in those. I couldn't, however, do any corporate work or entity formation or lease review or any work that would require licensure in that individual state.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But the central, you know, contract with the franchise is good to go, right?
Yes, it
good.
Is.
Well, how about, you know, does it take a lot of time when you're working with a client? Is there a difference between somebody that's sitting across the desk from you and somebody that might be sitting in Colorado and using your services?
Well, in certain respects, you know, the engagements with a prospective franchisee are somewhat similar. You know, I have to have the document and I have to have sufficient time to review it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would say that sitting across the table, those conferences maybe run a little bit longer. That's just the nature of the thing. But it would an initial conference after I've digested the document is going to be anywhere between, you know, 2 to 2.5 hours. I've had telephone conferences that have been longer than some in-office conferences. It's sometimes a matter of the client. It's sometimes a matter of the nature of the franchise. Some of them have a lot more moving pieces than others. And sometimes there are numerous documents that have to be reviewed and signed. Contracts that beyond the franchise agreement, that might be development agreements, there might be other ancillary contracts that have to be reviewed, and they all are going to take a certain amount of time to discuss. You know, the clients, the prospective franchisees, to your point, Bill, I know your show is geared towards former military, but the franchisees, even in the military, they come in all shapes and sizes, all different levels of sophistication. Some require a higher degree of hand-holding, so my goal is to sit with them initially as long as is necessary to get the questions answered. And then from that point on, seeing them through the negotiation process up until the time the deal is done or they determine that they don't want to do the deal.
Good, good. Yeah, I think maybe society has this picture of veterans all being fitting one mold, and, and just like the rest of society, you know, all different. Some of us are old and fat and bald, and some of them are, you know, young and young and strong, just coming out. So,
well, the one thing they all have in common is that they've not bought a franchise before.
Well, yeah,
and so it's new to everybody, and it's a world that you and I live in every day, but for them it's something different. So we have to respect that and avoid jargon and make sure everything is understood.
Absolutely. Well said. Well said. Well, what do you see, are there trends in the types of franchises that you're seeing, or what's, the question I get all the time, what's hot, which I try to put down and say, no, that's not the right question.
So. Well, that's right. When someone mentions franchising, the first thing everybody thinks about is food. And food, is out there. It's a strong area of franchising, but I see mostly non-food franchises. Yeah. Trends, I think there have certainly been a lot more education franchises, tutoring, supplemental education. There's been a lot of franchises lately in the pet industry. Mm-hmm. I've worked with clients with dog daycare, dog walking, dog training, dog agility. All kinds of things. There's really no end to it. You know, franchising just describes the model of how a business is expanded.
Yep.
But if the business is duplicatable and has something unique about it, there's really no end to what can be franchised.
Yep, absolutely. And service businesses are where I like to play the most. And I'm into my eighth year now as a consultant, and I have avoided food concepts that whole time. So,
and that's really smart. You know, I think that by and large, the smart food franchisors are going to avoid offering to other people who don't have a food background, because it's really unique unto itself. And people think they want to have a food franchise, but there are a lot of moving pieces to it operationally.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I like ice cream, so I should go buy an ice cream one. And that, no.
And in fact, that's a great thing you just said, because that's one of the biggest mistakes I think people make.
Yep.
They think they want to buy a business because they're a fan of the ultimate service or product that's being sold. But I think the key to success in franchising, from my perspective, is really looking at the business model. Is it scalable? Mm-hmm. Does it have an exit strategy that makes sense? Just because someone likes old people doesn't mean they should buy a senior care franchise.
That's right.
There are other reasons.
Or like the executive who's coming out of a corporate position and loves to play golf and thinks a golf retail store would be just great. It's a retail store. It's not a golf store.
That's right. So they have to consider lifestyle and other issues as well. So.
Absolutely. And we talked a little bit before we came on the air, but I'm seeing a lot of more activity this year than last year. How about you in terms of the economy in general or people getting into business?
Yeah, I agree. I think for a while there was so much uncertainty before the election and the economy being what it was, and I think people are finally deciding to move forward with deals. I was just mentioning to you that I've worked with 3 prospects this week, all in very, very different franchise systems. So deals are out there getting done.
Yep. Yeah, I see a lot of activity right now, and I'm excited about what this year could be and leading on in, even into next year. So, well, great. Well, what else, have I not asked that maybe you'd like to mention?
Well, I think people need to, who are going into franchising, need to understand that it is a serious business transaction. If things don't work out, there could be potentially serious ramifications financially. You know, if you have a retail location, aside from the obligations to the franchisor, you have
a lease
that you've had to personally guarantee. The franchise agreement itself may provide certain payments that have to be made in the event that you terminate early. So that's another thing that we look at in the franchise agreement, mm-hmm. not to mention other debt that's been incurred. Many people these days are, and this may not apply to your listener base as much, are borrowing against retirement funds, mm-hmm. and so... These are transactions that are serious. They really can have long-term effects in the event of a failure. That's why I just find it hard to believe someone would not want to get the best expert advice they could before they go into it.
Absolutely. I always advise people to seek the advice of a franchise attorney, as part of their acquisition cost, and not to go to, Uncle Ralph, the real estate attorney, even though he's your long-time uncle. But go to somebody that knows the industry and knows what can be negotiated and what cannot.
Right, and find a good financial professional, a good CPA with a business background, not necessarily the guy that's been doing your income taxes every year, but someone who can look at your pro forma, can validate it or tell you that you've missed things or you've made incorrect assumptions, mm-hmm. and just make sure the numbers look right. That's invaluable as well.
Oh, absolutely, because you can – you can make it look really nice, and the expectations are what really turns out. What was it John Lennon said, life is what happens while you're making other plans? So,
well, that's right. And the other thing that people need to bear in mind is that the FDD, of course, from my perspective, is a legal document. It's a mm-hmm. disclosure document. But for the franchisor, it's a sales document, So the way things are presented, not to suggest that they're not presented properly with adequate disclosure, but the goal for the franchisor is to sell, that's got to be kept in mind as well.
Yep, very true. Go into it with your eyes open, do your homework, get good advice, and make an informed, intelligent decision.
That's right.
It's best for you and your family. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Well, Joe, how can people reach you if they'd like to contact you and ask more questions or use your services?
Sure. Well, they can find me certainly on the internet. I have a couple of maybe five informational videos that are posted to YouTube and also to my law firm's website, which is www.cgpglaw.com. And I answer certain commonly asked questions about franchising that's often very, very helpful to people. And just Google me, and you should be able to find me.
Okay. All right. Very good. Well, thank you once again for coming in. It's been really an interesting session and a very informative one. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Bill. My pleasure.
Good. And, thanks for listening out there. The International Franchise Association describes a frantrepreneur as someone possessing the desire to become a business owner by following a proven system for the benefit of personal and professional goals. And the National Veteran-Owned Business Association defines a vetrepreneur as a military veteran who organizes and manages a business. So our mission here at From Boots to Biz Radio is to help create more veteran Frenchpreneurs by providing information, education about the many choices. You can check us out on the From Boots to Biz Radio homepage on Business Radio X. And when you check that out, look for our webinars. We're going to start offering webinars coming up here on February 26th, and there'll be a registration link there for you. So this is Bill Williams, the host of From Boots to Biz. If you have any questions, you can for me, you can check our landing page at www.axiom. That's Alpha X-ray IOM franchiseadvisors.com/B Williams. So carry on, and we'll see you next week. Thank you.